This is a crusade. This is a holy war against the deep state.
Where are the dictators? Where are the strong men?
Donald Trump is our instrument for retribution.
I'm going to fight for Christians. I'm going to fight for white people.
They have the Great Reset. We have the Great Awakening.
And why shouldn't I root for Russia?
Because I am.
I want to see these people go through misery because of their grooming against our children.
After the assailant entered the home asking, "Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy?" Those are the very same words used by the mob when they stormed the United States Capitol.
I did nothing wrong.
Welcome to the Did Nothing Wrong podcast, where we cut through the noise and help you make sense of the chaotic information space around us. I'm Griff Somke. What is radical joy? Radical joy is finding meaning and beauty in the craziness of everyday life. On this episode of the Did Nothing Wrong podcast, Samantha Kuttner joins me once again to discuss this concept and talk about how it informs her work, as well as her creation of the Glitter Pill community. Stick around. Samantha, welcome back to Did Nothing Wrong. Thanks for coming on again today.
Thanks for having me.
So we're going to be talking about something that's kind of a big concept today, something that's really a way to look at the world and to make sure that you can keep going, because there's a lot of negative stuff out there, especially right now. And it's very hard to keep your head on straight, for lack of a better phrase, with what's going on in the news and what's going on just in the world outside. You're going to talk about something called radical joy.
Yes. And this is going to hit people wrong at first. So the concept of radical joy comes from this place of understanding that there are many, many, many rich and powerful people that have recognized it's easier to turn people away from voting or activism or anything that fosters some sense of equality, justice, fights for human rights, than it is to persuade them to believe in something else. So if you're feeling jaded or perhaps hopeless or just so overwhelmed with everything that you don't know where to start, or perhaps you're in communities where kind of nihilism and like it really doesn't matter is the norm, I'd love for people listening to take a step back and recognize, you know, that feeling benefits people in power. And if that doesn't make you at least a little bit angry, it could motivate you almost as a, I don't know if we're allowed to curse on this.
Oh, but, yeah. Curse all you want.
It could motivate you almost as a fuck you to invest in self-care. And, you know, what does that look like? It's not buying some super, you know, influencer program where for a nominal fee, you get to be part of some mastermind or whatever. It's not subscribing to... Right. Some type of all meat diet, because that's the issue. It's not tied to products. It's not tied to kind of empty sayings that aren't rooted in good scientific practices. It's rooted ultimately in community. And I think people who haven't had to experience community or have had kind of an approximation of it online through social media would greatly benefit from seeing joy and resistance as radical in that way of, okay, I'm not going to succumb to something that's going to make me like not motivated to do what's in my capacity to do as an activist or a researcher or a scholar activist or someone who sees the injustices in the world and wants to do something about it. I think everyone tries to focus on fixing something outside of themselves, and you know, it's not super marketable and it's not super, you know, sexy, and it doesn't come with some mastermind package. But my whole philosophy as someone who's led the Glitter Pill community for years is that all that work starts with you.
Right.
And where I see my community fitting in is, you know, you can take the black pill and get super nihilistic. You can take the red pill and then open your eyes to male subjugation by women or under feminism. Or you can, you know, take the glitter pill and embrace this world of nuance and pluralism and the sense of community that's not rooted on like, you need to believe X, Y, or Z, as much as it is like, hey, this world is can be a terrible awkward place, and power dynamics exist everywhere, and abuse dynamics exist everywhere. Here's a space where we're like reading books and mm-hmm. talking about the world and participating in things and promoting discussion, kind of like a grad student program for people who don't necessarily have time for grad school because they're working full time or they're just committed to other projects. It's just like lots of low effort things you can do within community to really build up resilience and do whatever it is you say you want to do, but don't necessarily have the energy or time for.
Right.
So that's, in short, radical joy is, you know, taking care of yourself as an act of resistance and finding genuine peace and happiness within yourself, whatever that looks like.
Yeah. And what you say about time, it comes down to a lot of it is a case of you only have so much time in the course of the day. And if you want to get everything done, you think, oh, I can blow that off. I can not take the time to take 10 minutes and do some breathing or go outside and take a walk. These are the things that tend to get missed in the challenging time crunch we're all in, because the world is crazy. We're all doing a whole bunch of different things for the most part. And the easiest thing to blow off is, like you said, the self-care end of it. But, you know, and I've seen it in my own life, that's the kind of thing that eventually catches up with you. If you're not doing that kind of work, eventually you're going to hit a wall that you just can't push through. So the idea of being willing to stop and take that time so you can keep going, so you can wake up tomorrow and go again. You know, these are very important points. And it's something we ask almost everybody that's been on the podcast. Like, how do you keep going? That's a question that we've asked any number of people that have done it. And we've gotten answers that range from, well, I do yoga, I do dance, I do all these other various things, to, what are you talking about? Keep going. I barely keep going. I've barely got my feet under me. And it seems like the people who've been at it for a while have come up with something. The people who have done this kind of work, done activism, whatever that looks like to them, you know, political work or journalism or research, they've come up with a way to take that time away from it and recenter, as it were.
Yeah, I think you have to in order to not burn out. And by the time you recognize that you need to take a break, you're probably already in the stages of burnout. So it's, you know, it's a preventative measure to find whatever spaciousness you can find in the day, which is really hard. You have to cultivate that, whether that's, you know, when you brush your teeth, being mindful about it for the 2 minutes that you're supposed to be brushing your teeth, or doing some of the challenges in my community, or whatever it is. If you had done nothing that day for yourself, you'll at least be able to check off that right. one little thing. It doesn't have to be some grand all or nothing. I'm going to do 2 hours of yoga followed by meditation, followed by this, and read the book that I want. And then you recognize that, you know, your life isn't necessarily structured to do all the things you want that way. You have to build the habit gradually.
I've been doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for a number of years. I've been training since 2005. And one of the things I like the most about it is that it makes you absolutely focus on the moment. You are grappling another human being. You have to be all there in order for this to work. You can't be thinking about, oh, the, you know, the podcast or whatever the interaction I had with this other person is. It will not work that way. You have to be really absolutely present in the moment to see what you're being handed to deal with, what you're handing the partner to deal with. You can't be scattered and make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that, you know, the more I do, the more helpful it is to be able to just go in and train 8 or 9 times with different people and just kind of get your head completely out of anything you're doing that's the crazy in the world right there.
100%. I feel like it's also a good gauge of when you're neglecting self-care, like the stuff that you care about. If you're finding excuses to not go, or you're saying it's not as important as the work in the world, that's usually a good indicator that you should kind of force yourself to, you know, eat your peas more or less and do the thing that is actually good for you, even if it feels like pulling teeth if you've had a particularly hard day. Like, those are the days where you need to do it the most, not necessarily when you're the most inspired or, you know, uplifted or motivated. That like consistency over time is going to help a lot. And it's a lot of recognizing the ways that you self-sabotage or get in your own way, and the stories you tell yourself that might be societally conditioned. You know, like, for example, so many people in our space, they tend to be a bit on the martyry side, you know, like, right. I can imagine saying, you know, why not focus on self-care? And it's like, how dare you ask me to focus on my self-care when there's so much going on in the world? And it's like, Jesus Christ. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously. It's like, we know that there's stuff going on in the world, and the stuff in the world will still be going on when you come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it honestly will. I think everybody that does this kind of work has an understanding that this doesn't end with us. There's going to be this kind of work always. So you have to be able to put it aside sometimes and say, you know what? This is still going to be here in an hour. This is still going to be here in 15 minutes. There is no big, huge difference I'm going to make by not taking this 15 minutes right now and using it to just catch my breath, to just not think about this for a few minutes.
Yeah, 100%.
And that becomes more and more important with how crazy things have gotten lately. As I said in the intro, we are seeing a very, shall we say, almost accelerated timeline out there right now. The war in Gaza has kind of consumed almost everything, it feels like. Everybody's got a side. Everybody's got a nuance. Everybody's got a take on this. And it has now spread to college campuses in the United States and overseas. It was a couple of schools 2 weeks ago, Columbia, I think, and that was about it. And next thing you know, now it's everywhere. It's at Whitman College in Walla Walla, Washington. And that means that, you know, it's everywhere at this point. And we're being kind of asked to really take a side on this. We're being asked to say, this is either an absolute bad or an absolute good. And I don't think it's that simple. It feels like a case of, we've got a lot of idealism here, and that needs to be nuanced to some extent, but mm-hmm. we've also got a lot of cynicism. And it's trying to separate, you know, what's really good to be nuanced about, what's really good to be idealistic about, what you should be cynical about, and not give in to one or the other completely here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think back to one of the neuroscience studies that I got to really dive into. The entire study, you know, it hooked people up to fMRIs, and it had them, you know, it started with an image of a dog and a cat. And over time, the images kind of morphed into each other, right? And then, like, as they increasingly went into each other, they were asked, participants were asked to determine if this was a dog or a cat. And, like, the ambiguity of it increased the dwell time as the images got closer, like, as the cat dog got closer and closer. And I love that study because it talks about how we think heuristically. We like to put things in boxes and categorize them as good or bad. Definitely genocide bad. Nobody is saying that, right?
Right.
But, you know, on April 25th, for example, George Washington University, about half a mile from the White House, Brian Baedeker was there, and he is a known neo-Nazi Patriot Front member, all around, you know, person you don't really want to be the figurehead of March for Gaza.
No, the man's got manifestos out there talking about shootings.
Yeah.
And how he'd like to do one at some point.
Yeah, like, not the prize that you would like, you know, to be representative, but glomming on to the movement, right? He's not, you know, a part of that necessarily, but in these decentralized networks where a ton of people mobilize on narratives that move them to a place physically offline, you're going to get figures like that. Mm-hmm. And on April 26th, Sami Al-Aryan took a photo of his wife, who was inside the Columbia encampments, and supported her, and, you know, said that she was expressing solidarity with the protesters. And if you do some preliminary searching, as counterterrorism scholars have done, mm-hmm. You would know that Sami Al-Aryan in 2006, you know, got tried for actually supporting the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. This is something that's verified by court records. And, you know, he wasn't there partly because of that. And so these are people that you don't necessarily want as representative of movements that are ostensibly fighting for human rights. And this isn't the fault of the huge crowd of protesters, but it's really important in these moments to really think through
what you're doing. Think through who you're supporting, who you're potentially putting forward. And a lot of people, I think, don't necessarily realize that the emotions get really high. You really have a lot of feeling about this. And you get to the point where you're going to make the most provocative, the most confrontational sign or tweet or post that you can, because you really want to show everybody how you feel about this. You'll show them. You'll make sure that they understand. And this is the kind of thing that ends up becoming bulletin board material for the other side.
Exactly. Like, I actually got angry about, the stuff that's just kind of not entertainment fodder is the right word. I think people are getting radicalized thinking they're being entertained on Twitter, which is a whole other component. But there was a rich white protester who took a photo that was like Al-Qassad's next target that was in front of Jewish people, and it was protesting. And like later on, it was found out that she literally grew up in a mansion in Georgia. And it's like people who are adopting the aesthetics of the movements because it's like hip and cool that don't particularly care.
Right.
And there's also this another person who was arrested. But then, when Ted Cruz starts amplifying the like rich white people getting arrested at these protests, I treat everything he shares with, a grain of, okay, like how does this benefit the narrative, you know? And then also there was a Jewish barbecue Becky type thing where somebody called the cops on the encampment and was getting overly emotional and things like that. But as people are focusing on that part, those two instances I described above just kind of fade in the background, don't get as much attention. And I think those are the more important things. And, going to the one of the most extreme examples on January 6th, everyone had their eyes on the QAnon shaman and the spectacle at all.
Right.
They weren't on that day necessarily paying attention to the insurrectionists who had zip ties and were actively looking for elected officials.
Yeah, it's like they missed Nancy Pelosi in her office by however long it takes a screensaver to turn off on a computer.
Yeah.
Right? That's scary to me that they were that close. And some of these people were prepared to do serious harm to any elected officials that they got a hold of. But we're all focused on the dude with the funny hat and the body paint. It's really disheartening when you see it, because we're seeing a lot of the same stuff happen here. They're focused on the one person with the sign, the person in Colombia who made the video that was very offensive and that everybody got mad about. But you're missing a lot of the other stuff that's going on here as a result.
Yeah. And I think it's really important for people in these moments. It's really hard when your emotions are kind of being, hijacked by social media that wants to captivate as much of your attention as possible, and people who are bad faith actors mixed in with everything else. It's really good for people to just for themselves sit and like, okay, where am I vulnerable? Like if someone came to me and started just flooding me with disinformation that appealed to my biases,
right,
where would they start? Like, and it's hard to think about that, but it's harder to come back if you've been inundated with disinformation that appeals to your biases.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And the best disinformation absolutely does. Like if you really want to get people, it seems like the best way to do it is to give them something that's a little bit true, that's absolutely in their wheelhouse. Doesn't have to be all true. In fact, it's better if it isn't. But it's something that's plausible, a little bit true, and a subject that they really, really, really are passionate about. And from there, you can lead them just absolutely down the path. And we see this online. We see this in the real world, but we see a lot of this online too. There's people who can take like one particular bad actor. Everyone knows it's a bad actor. And turn it into the centerpiece of some massive conspiracy theory that, quite frankly, is going to move you away from doing a lot of positive stuff. It's going to lock you into an echo chamber of posting and being convinced that everybody in the world is out to get you, and everybody in the world is out to get the guy who's telling you all this, so you should send money.
Mm-hmm.
It is a really bad actor thing to do, and it hasn't stopped anybody. It hasn't stopped a lot of these people, but it starts with being able to step back and give them something that plays to their priors.
Yeah. 100%. And then, you know, I think about the written expert testimony that I and others submitted for the January 6th Select Committee, where I talked about just seeing through their Telegram channels this alternate reality that was literally constructed mm-hmm. through disinformation that, again, appealed to their biases. They're sharing these links rapid fire, and it really can become someone's reality. So when people are wondering how during the insurrection, people who were engaged in this act considered themselves to be patriots, it boggles the mind of most people. But if you see how it happens and how the process happens and how it's like this, it's never this full-on thing where you're like, okay, I'm this now. It's gradual, and then it's just this persistent flooding of disinformation, and you're really like eroding people's ability to critically think.
Mm-hmm.
But it's appealing to their biases, so they're less likely to be on alert for like, oh, that doesn't really sound right.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I would just encourage everyone in these moments to consider like who in this year of global elections who are the people that benefit from moving you in any which way? You know, can you support human life, human rights in a way that's within your integrity and your values? Are people telling you that you don't care about Palestinians or Jewish people unless you do X, Y, Z? Like, who are these people to say what you should and shouldn't do to show your support? But again, all the nuance and complexity and everything just gets thrown out the window in these hyper polarized moments and environments where we're not always, especially on Twitter, given access to quality information.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up because like one of the ones that keeps coming up every time they do a march, you mentioned earlier, the group Patriot Front.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you who aren't necessarily super familiar, they are a white nationalist group led by a guy named Thomas Rousseau. Their whole thing, for the most part, is doing marches. So they all show up wearing similar outfits, khaki pants, blue shirts, baseball caps, and masks. And they walk through various places in numbers. They did one this weekend in Charleston, West Virginia. And one of the more persistent things that gets repeated every time they do one is they're feds.
Mm-hmm.
And they're feds because no one ever, you know, arrests them. No one ever takes, you know, pictures of these guys. And I found myself thinking, you know, this is just factually not true. It doesn't help mm-hmm. that Elon Musk keeps repeating it every single time that gets said, because they did this at the Pride Parade in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
They showed up stuffed in a U-Haul truck. And the Coeur d'Alene police saw that, pulled them over, got a tip from a concerned citizen. It's like, they've got a small army stuffed in a U-Haul truck and they're heading for Pride, or heading for that area. So they got stopped, they got pulled out, and they got arrested. Every single one of them got photographed. Dave Nyward, who is a respected journalist, as respected as anybody on this beat,
mm-hmm.
was there and took pictures of every single one of these guys as they were coming out of the truck. They were all arrested. They were all handcuffed. They were all charged. They were all mugshotted. They were on the front page of the Spokane Spokesman Review with a big headline that said Patriot Front arrested, and every single one of the mugshots. Yet people still repeat that. Because they've been told over and over, well, they've never been looked at, so they must be feds. This whole thing must be a fed op. And it's kind of like, what is it going to take? I directly challenged one of these guys. I'm like, okay, so here's this very respected journalist. I'm tagging him in now. He took pictures of this himself. He's got a body of work going back decades in this field. What evidence would it take to convince you?
Right. I remember that day because I was at a party trying to be normal and they were playing Cards Against Humanity. And then I got up and I said, I'm sorry, I have to go. A bunch of Nazis were arrested from a U-Haul or something to that effect. And someone said, is that a Cards Against Humanity card? What is it? You know, like, and then I think a few of them get nauseous pretty easily. It's like, I don't know. These things are so strange. There's so many things that have happened from the start of Donald Trump's campaign onward that are just so strange and fantastical that everyone tells themselves these stories to kind of cope with like just what the hell is going on, right? And I think in our capacity for storytelling, we could literally just shut off like, oh, okay, yeah, Dave Nyrat is like one of the most respected journalists out there. And if he's saying this and like observing it and there's footage and all of this, like you're just choosing not to see that because of the story you've told yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it really comes down to, is like these people get themselves into a place where reality is whatever their news sources say it is. Reality is not this objective thing anymore. Reality is whatever the people posting on Patriots Win have to say about it now. It's just,
yeah. And it's like, does Thomas Rousseau really care about Palestinians? No. Do Christian nationalists care about Jews? Also, no. Like, you know, people also don't want to talk about the opportunism of people who benefit from, okay, like, some of you hate the Jews, I hate the Jews, let's do this. Or like, or, you know, the Christian nationalist belief that when the world ends, it will happen in Israel. So their primary investment in that region is, you know, more on the biblical side. You know, people don't want to talk about it because when you get into politics and Israeli Palestinian, like, that is such a mess.
Sure.
It's just like to sift through all of that. People have to tell these stories, but they can engage with quality content, discuss it with people, and not just repeatedly get exposed to bad information, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think, becoming something that's just rarer and rarer, because we're seeing a lot less in the way of people socializing with each other. We're not seeing as many like real honest discussions about this kind of stuff anymore. It's more like people watch a video and they think that, oh, this is the whole thing. I'm watching this video. I know everything about this subject because I watched a YouTube video, 5-minute video. And it's what you said earlier. It's not just having the information. It's like asking that question behind the information. It's like, who benefits from you believing this?
Mm-hmm.
Whose agenda is this in this video? And who benefits from you believing uncritically everything that's in here? And in a lot of cases, that answer is not nice.
Yeah.
Like you were saying earlier, it's not the people that you want to benefit. In fact, it's the people that you think you're out here protesting against in a lot of cases. So you really want to take that extra step, that extra time to reflect on this. You don't have to have a take right away necessarily. You know, you're not necessarily a pundit. You can set them out every so often. You don't have to be involved in all of them.
Yeah, yeah. I think about everyone, that tendency to just rush to the scene to communicate that people know something. It's... You know, you don't have to take every single thing. If there are people that you trust that are sharing good information, you can amplify their work. You can comment on that, add to the discussion. I just wonder how many people, before they even have an original thought in the morning, just go straight to their phones and go to like their feeds, right?
Yep.
And just get flooded with all kinds of stuff before they even get a chance to really critically engage, which is, you know, part of why it's hard to advocate for something like Glitter Pill until like you're in the community and you experience it. But it's low effort things that might be hard at first, but you genuinely have a community of people that like are there exploring in their own way, whether they're attending the movie nights or engaging with the books or trying to do the monthly self-care challenges. There's like a bit of something for everybody to tap into there. And I feel like that is so much healthier than starting your morning with Twitter or Facebook or, oh my God, what happened? Just reacting, endlessly reacting to things versus, okay, like, how do I want to feel today? What do I want to think? What do I want to critically engage with? How can I use social media as a tool for critical inquiry instead of being hooked to this platform so people can sell me shit I don't need because I'm hooked to this stuff?
Exactly. So let's talk about this for a minute. Let's talk about the Glitter Pill community. And you talk about like self-care challenges. Can you walk me through how that works?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm continuing this month's self-care challenge, and it's going to be 750 words again. It's an exercise from a book called The Artist's Way. Not every part of that, in my opinion, of that book was excellent, but that practice is something that I've been doing since 20, 13, I want to say. And it's helped me navigate like the cognitive dissonance that came with stuff way before I ever, you know, went back to school, got my degrees, did all that. It's helped me overcome writing blocks. It's helped me tap into this really interesting space where you can kind of, on a not a woo level, but, you know, you can kind of tap into this subconscious level of thought where like there's a lot of inspiration and things that, you know, like original ideas and moments that, you know, kind of wake you up. And I don't know how to explain it unless like you feel it when you're in it. But right. I call that whole work kind of spelunking because you never know what you're going to find down there. But to get to that level of your, like just the glimmers or the first like entryway of like your subconscious, you have to get through all of the clutter, right? So like, right. Let's say you wake up and you're kind of regurgitating news, or you have an endless to-do list, or you're thinking about the thing that you did like 10 years ago, whatever it might be. You just type it out or write it out. It's 750 words, all free writing. No going back to fix your grammar. No going back to revise anything. You just let it all out onto the page. And then when you're done, it's done. You can go longer than 750 words if you like. But if you do at least that, whether that's online or through just writing it out, which is the equivalent of about 3 pages, you really just clear up all the clutter in your mind and kind of start a little bit fresher and a little bit more inspired. And when you do it over time, it's kind of like exercise where like you feel different if you don't do it. And it's right. A daily exercise. People who participate the most days in it next month will get, you know, a special prize from me and the Glitter Pill community. But it doesn't have to be every single day, because when you're cultivating a new habit, you know, there's some days that are harder than others. You want to try your best to do it. And then just note for yourself, you know, the changes that occur over time. I was having, for the people who really are into that stuff or journal a lot or things, extra questions like, you know, what was your most profound thought of the day? I think it's just a really fun, like indulgent exercise to create spaciousness for yourself. And over time, because it taps into metacognition, thinking about your own thinking, it enables you to look at the world through a lens that's, you know, yours and not necessarily whatever is being crafted by major social media companies, oligarchs, political figures, reactionary journalists, influencers. There's so much noise. If you can find a little space and calm and tap into your own intuition every day a little bit, you might engage with the news and the work in a more nuanced, inspired way.
Basically breaking free from the algorithm for a while.
Yeah.
Building it out for yourself. Like, okay, I have all this in my head. I'm very distracted by all these things. So I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write it all out. And that way, hopefully, I've gotten it out. This is over here now. And I can start fresh with a new thing. I can start fresh with whatever I need to do over the course of the day, rather than this whole thing that's kind of getting in the way because I can't clear it out of my head. Am I kind of in the ballpark here?
Yeah. And I recommend for people who are really, really in the trenches, so to speak, starting it in the day and then using it to decompress at night. But, you know, baby steps.
Okay. And this is something that you've had quite a bit of participation in, right? People are starting to really pick up on the fact that this resource is out there, and they're starting to think that this is a good way to get this stuff out of your head and be more productive as a human. Whether it's,
yeah, I think there are about 30 newsletter subscribers, because I kind of made it sneaky, because you know how a lot of newsletters are like, look how awesome we are, look at all the stuff we're doing. I just made the newsletter the challenge. So everything, like there's updates on like community events, but then there's inspiration for the challenge. I was doing it daily, but it was hard once I got hired and I got some other consulting work to keep it up daily. But there's at least weekly inspiration with like invitations to events. So you can get involved with the community, you know, quickly and do whatever you find, you know, and support at whatever level you can, because the newsletter I made free for everybody, because I feel like we all just benefit from critically thinking in this moment.
Yeah, definitely. Because there's a lot of crazy out there. And the more you can take a non-reactionary, more nuanced view of what's going on, the better we're all going to be, because there's a ripple effect to that kind of stuff too. If you're the calm one in your circle, those around you are going to be calmer. Those around them are going to be calmer. It's going to spread. Whereas if you're hanging out with people who are always continuously being moved from one crisis to the next, you're going to reflect that energy to a large extent.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want it to come from a frantic, oh my God, I have to do this right now moment. Right.
Right.
And easier said than done. Nobody's perfect. Right.
Sure.
But
sure.
It's a goal. It's a noble goal to work towards.
So how do people find this? How do people who haven't already signed up for this go ahead and sign up for this?
So to sign up, you can visit proudboyswhisperer.com/newsletter, and then you'll be entered. You'll go through a little mini, you know, vetting process, and then you'll be able to receive all of the email invites to become a supporting member of the community and gain access to all of the virtual events and meetups. I have it through the Glitter Pill Patreon, which I believe is patreon.com/theglitterpillcommunity. You can engage just as a listener through checking out the Glitter Pill podcast, where I try to have at least one or two people on a month that offer a nuanced, insightful, inspiring perspective about some of these things and talk about the taboo issues, kind of like what we discussed today. But the starting point is the newsletter, and all of the support for the Patreon goes back to supporting my audio engineer, people who are part of the graphic design team, and helps me rebuild the community in the way that I've known how, but never properly allocated resources for until this year, right, when I realized how important it was to just make this work on yourself fun and embrace like absurdist moments. Like, I don't know if you were there for the kind of really silly, absurdist, like touch grass trademark moment.
Yeah. That was amazing. Like the idea that that's something that you can trademark, like telling somebody that phrase is something that you can.
Yeah, it's just such a perfect example of how far gone people can be online and what people demand from others. So, you know, one person telling other people to touch grass and go outside, an academic responding that he should have like cited his sources because someone else was talking about something similar as if an outside didn't exist before. Like, it's just so absurd. But the cool thing about that is that's really a good insight into the joyful collaborative element of the Glitter Pill community, which is another way to kind of foster resilience. Because in those moments where you really lean into the absurdity, you can turn this thing into a source of fun and entertainment, but also make it do good, like immediately. Like, for example, everything that goes to the shirt that we're going to create for Mike Rothschild will be donated to Planned Parenthoods in the area, depending on, you know, what person, you know, buys what in which state. And so it's not only like good, funny, a source of entertainment, a way to poke fun at people who are like terminally online and maybe encourage us to be a little bit less online, but it like goes to something that does tangible good in the world. And that's kind of like my favorite part of the community, among other things.
It's just such a brilliant idea to take something that somebody said that, you know, could just turn into this absolute source of rage and turn it into, yeah, we're going to make a t-shirt out of that. We're going to make a t-shirt out of that, and we're going to give the money to some very deserving cause. Because the idea that you think you can trademark this is the dumbest thing that I think I've heard all year. But rather than just roast the guy, do something productive with it.
Right. It's like, thanks for supporting this charity, asshole. Or like, exactly. Kind of like a really playful fuck you.
Mm-hmm. And there's so much of that stuff that you could just spend all your time being mad about. Or you could find a way to turn it into some other source of, like you said in the beginning, radical joy. And there's never going to be a shortage of pretentious assholes out there who think that they can trademark a phrase like touch grass. So you're never going to be short of things to put on t-shirts, at least.
Right. And because there's so much harassment against people doing good work, the possibilities for embracing these moments of absurdism are literally endless.
Right. Thank you, Samantha. I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk with me out of your busy schedule today. This has been a great experience. I feel much more radically joyful than I did when we started this a few minutes ago. So thank you for taking that time. And Again, the website is proudboyswhisperer.com/newsletter. Please go sign up for this. Check out some of the ideas, because it's wonderful that somebody's doing this kind of work out there, thinking about it on this level. So thank you. Thank you for coming on.
Anytime.
Thanks for listening to the Did Nothing Wrong podcast. If you want to hear more, you can find us on the web at didnothingwrongpod.com. Please make sure you subscribe to get our content straight into your inbox. You can also follow us on Twitter at GrizzaBJJ, GrzaBJJ, as well as DNWPod. We're extremely grateful for paid subscriptions and donations that allow us to keep doing this important work. Thanks, and remember, everyone mentioned did nothing wrong.